Hello and welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. Say hello, John.
Hello, I'm John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction, fantasy, and other nerdy things, and you can get lots of my music for free over at johnanilio.com.
Hey, you know what I was going to tell you?
What?
I went to Worldcon, mm-hmm. and I got to meet with all these other podcasters, mm-hmm. and it was really interesting because they all had theme songs written by John Anilio.
They do. Not all of them do, but... Can you name some of them?
Mer Lafferty. I got to talk to Lee Harris from Angry Robot.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, you know, it's funny, Patrick. It's funny that you mentioned that because I had this thought, and I'm going to put it out there in public now, but I'm telling you this probably won't happen, but I had a thought this week because when this airs, it'll already be out, but I did a simple little acoustic recording of something kind of, well, I'll just say it because it's out. A good friend of the podcast, Lou Anders, won the Hugo Award for Best Editor.
Yep.
And when I heard that, I was excited for him. So I wrote this little congratulations, Lou Anders ditty. Just a little, basically, I sing that line. So I just threw that up on Bandcamp. And by the time this airs, it'll be out for people to go and listen to. And it's sort of my little congratulatory thing to Lou.
I was there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, obviously, you know that. I was actually there at the Hugos. I saw Lou win. He was very emotional, obviously.
Yeah.
Afterwards, they had this just gigantic room. Mm-hmm. And I think they said they were expecting 1,500 to 2,000 people at the Hugo Awards. And so I was sitting there with a bunch of the Ink Punks. So, you know, John Remy, Andy Romain, Sandra Wickham was there somewhere. James Gates was there. Just a bunch of them. And afterwards, there was this little reception area outside. And Lou Anders was standing there. And so I walked up and I said, congratulations, Lou. You know, it's well-deserved, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. And somebody came up and asked him for an autograph. And he's standing there holding his Hugo. And he just looked at me and he handed it and said, will you hold this for a second? And I'm like, sure. And so I'm standing there holding Lou Anders' Hugo. And he, you know, he signed the autograph. And then the rat bastard asked for it back.
How dare he?
How dare he? Yeah. You know, and I was thinking to myself, I could run. He couldn't possibly catch me in this crowd.
I saw you tweet that. That was really funny.
I gave it back. I did the right thing, you know. But that was huge. And also, Clark's World won a Hugo.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so our friends over there, Kate Baker and Neil Clark, were there, and I took a picture of them and got to chat with them and congratulate them as well. So yeah, that was huge. That was huge. So yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing the song now.
Yeah, oh, it's just like a little thing, and I recorded it with my podcasting mic, just me saying. I didn't do a big production of it. I just, you know, just a little something.
Did you do like the breathless singing, like congratulations?
No, I absolutely did not do that. Because that is weird and creepy. But it got me thinking when I was doing that, because I have kind of a new setup in my house so I can record in an easier way. Even though I've put a lot of music out in the past year, the way my setup has been, I kind of can only do it at certain times, and it's, you know, I have to sort of kick everybody out, or so anyway, it's hard to record certain things for me, especially vocals. But I have things set up so I could do it a little more easily now. And I was thinking after doing that little Congratulations Lou song, I'm like, well, I could do little songs like this all the time where I just, you know, not like the big productions that I normally do, but just like little funny things once in a while. And I was thinking, what if I did, because Patrick has always given me a hard time about not having a theme song. Like, what if I did a new theme song every week and like worked the guest's name into it and everything? I'm like, I could totally do that. And part of me thinks, you know, if I didn't have a job, I could do that. I don't know if it's going to work, but I've been playing around with that idea. I don't know if that's going to happen. It may happen once just to see, but I'm sure once I get into full swing of my day job going back to work in a week, that will probably not happen. But I'm thinking of it happening at least anyway. So we'll see.
What just totally jumped into my head is you sitting there, going, functional nerds, excellent, functional nerds, Lou Anders this week on the show.
Yeah, well, so that was because I was thinking about it, because our guest this week, might as well get into that, is Christopher Hart. Christopher Hart has a new book out called The Basic Anatomy for the Manga Artist. We had a great chat with Chris. He's a great artist, and he was a real nice guy, and has all these sort of how to draw books. And a lot of them are specifically about manga. And the reason I had this whole idea for the song is that I'm like, wow, I can rhyme Christopher Hart and art. That's perfect. I can do it. And I can just do that every week where we get an author and I just rhyme their name with something that has to do with them. And we're done. So, yeah. So, anyway. So again, our guest this week is Christopher Hart. We had a great chat with him. If you are into art in any way, I think you'll really enjoy this. He tells us sort of about his history as, becoming an artist. And, he said he went to art school with folks like John Lasseter, the head guy over at Pixar, and just was a really super interesting guy and nice guy. And hope you enjoy it. And on the line with us tonight, we have Christopher Hart. Christopher is the author of quite a few books on how to illustrate, and his most recent one is called Basic Anatomy for the Manga Artist. And Chris, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, now, did I pronounce it correctly?
No.
Did I pronounce how do you pronounce it, Patrick?
I would say manga.
Manga? Is it more manga, Chris?
Yes, it is. I mean, it is manga. For some people who really don't know it that well, say manga, but that is Italian for let's eat. It has nothing to do with drawing, so it is manga with a hard Z.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've heard it pronounced manga before. I don't know where I've heard it pronounced like that, but why don't you, that sort of can launch us right into why don't you give us a definition of what manga is and sure. What the sort of style of it is?
For people who are aware of manga, they know all about it. There are people who love graphic novels, and manga almost owns graphic novels. And you see it in the bookstores all over the place. And the fans of manga are really, I say, they're devoted, they're wonderful experts on the medium. People who aren't that familiar with it, tell you some things, you'll instantly know the genre. Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Dragon Ball Z, those big-eyed sort of Japanese cartoons that you see on television, in animated television, and it's the TV animation for manga is called anime. That's Japanese for animation. And we think of that as like original shows. Well, they're really not original shows. Just like Superman on TV didn't start off as TV Superman. He started off as a comic book. Manga is the same way. The stuff you see on TV started off as a graphic novel. It started off in basically their very, very thick books of comics in Japan, and they become these very, very popular color TV shows. But the manga itself is black and white graphic novels. And in Japan, they're read by people of all ages. They're read by commuters on subway trains, and they're literally up to 1,000 pages long. And the people are just enthralled with these things. It's some of the biggest publishing that goes on in Japan, and it all comes here. And almost all of it is translated from the Japanese. So if you get these graphic novels, you're seeing the real stuff. It's not Americanized. It is the Japanese authentic artwork, and the stories are translated.
Now, I've read a couple of different books about manga and anime and sort of culturally what goes into it. And one of the things that I remember reading about this a few years ago when I got kind of into the subject was now in Japan, they read from, sort of backwards from what we would read in the United States. Is it sort of right to left the pages?
Yeah, it's sort of like reading Hebrew.
Right.
I mean, it's right. It's right to left. And matter of fact, it's the back cover to the front cover, and they used to translate it. They used to transpose it so it looked like a regular English book, and they changed it all around. And the manga fans went crazy because they love authentic stuff. That's the most important thing to them. They want the real flavor of the Japanese stuff. So the publishers were forced to turn it back into the Japanese way. And, you know, I mean, they didn't think people would really get this, you know, because you open up the book and it says the end. But, you know, they loved it, and they're very sophisticated, these manga people. They know what's expected in the Japanese stuff. In the translation, some things were kind of funny because everything got changed around backwards. So if it were a baseball, because sports is you know, is a genre in itself, a manga sports. If there were a baseball story and they were translating it, transposing it, and changing the art around, someone would hit a ball and run to third base. It didn't quite always work. But by and large, the authentic stuff just gives people this flavor of this kind of sometimes, you know, different culture that enriches them.
Well, great. Now, let's back up for a second. And I'd like to talk a little bit about your development as an artist. So how did you get started drawing? And did you start real young? Did you get any formal training along the way? What's like sort of your arc in terms of becoming an artist?
You know, I've always drawn ever since I could lift a pencil and terrorize my parents by destroying all the wallpaper in any room. They put me in a timeout. Boom, you know, I needed another timeout immediately because I discovered a crayon. But I, you know, like many people, I see and get artwork by a lot of young people, and they email me, my website, ask for advice and this and that. And I find that we all basically start the same way. We start with a passion and a desire. We kind of find it kind of magical to draw. You know, it's kind of like this, almost like this kind of like magic trick, you know, and we want to learn it. We want to make these things come alive. And it's like, I don't know, for lack of a better analogy, it's like watching a movie take place as you're creating the movie itself. And so I started really drawing a lot, you know, when I was young. But what happened is when I got to be about 12 years old, I decided I needed a little help. And I bought my first How to Draw book. And it was wonderful. It showed me all these secrets, kind of opened up this whole world for me. I didn't know you could base things on round shapes and have this, you know, that think of things as three-dimensional and kind of construct things. And, you know, what happened was suddenly it gave me the ability to draw what I wanted to draw, not what I could draw. Because, you know, if you're only drawing what you can draw, you're limited. You know, you want to draw X, but you better draw Y because it's not going to look so good. So, you know, I started drawing from a lot of How to Draw books, but then I decided, you know, I really like this. I was starting to excel. And high school, some of my talent got, you know, discovered, thankfully, and I got a part-time job on weekends. I was in L.A. living there in San Diego, of all places. I used to travel down on the weekends, drive about 3 hours each way on the weekends to work in a small animation studio doing storyboards and character designs, a little pocket change, and also I would have done it for free, frankly. I really loved doing it. And then I applied for college to the character animation school at CalArts. It was the first year they instituted that. And some of my classmates were John Lasseter, who heads Pixar now.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brad Bird, who did The Incredibles, mm-hmm. etc. And so a lot of talented, wonderful people came out of that program. But after a number of semesters at CalArts, I was interested in putting together bigger projects and in certain ways, and I didn't want to just be an animator. I liked being like a character designer, and I didn't just want to draw animation. It was kind of tedious to me, and that was a lot of the focus, you know. Animation is 12 drawings for a second of action, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can draw your heart out, and all the guy's going to end up doing at the end of a month is just sipping a cup of coffee. Yeah. Whoa! You know, I broke my heart on his putting cream in that thing, you know. Yeah. So, anyhow, so I left, and I went to NYU, and where I pursued a film career. And, you know, stop me from getting into too much detail. But
no, this is great.
No, I ended up in Hollywood, and I ended up working, doing screenplays for a bunch of the studios, which I love doing. I was running comedy screenplays for 20th Century Fox and MGM, and I did something for Paramount, and a couple things for the Showtime network. But meanwhile, before that, I worked for Blondie Comic Strip. I was writing some stuff for them and for Mad Magazine. what happened was, meanwhile, someone from Watson Guptill, that's a publisher there, that they are the best publisher for art instruction books. I mean, when I went to college, I had some of their art instruction books, as we all did, you know, in our knapsack. And someone there knew that I drew cartoons. I had this background in cartooning and cartoons. They had never done a book before on cartoons. They always done it on watercolor and, you know, doing bowls of fruit, you know, and ladies lying down on a sheet of, you know, and posing with a leg bent and this and that and light on them and, you know, all that kind of great stuff that makes teenagers yawn. So they wanted to do a book in cartooning. They asked me if I would do it, and I said, sure, you know, why not? So I did it, and I forgot about it. And then an editor called me over to lunch about a year later and said, and I had no idea why. I was kind of a, you know, dumb. I was like, you know, I don't know how old I was, 27 or something. And I said, you know, we are 8 months. And I said, why are we here? And she said, do another one. Your book is doing really well. Do another one. And so I did another one. And then they said the same thing. And I did another one. They said the same thing. And all of a sudden I realized, you know, I've got a series here. And they're doing pretty well. And my wife said, you know, I hate L.A. more than anything in the entire world. Can we please move back to the East Coast? And that's where my publisher was. And you know what? I like seeing my stuff in bookstores, you know? I mean, I know that every producer in L.A. told me that they loved me to death, but they didn't. And, enough with the air kisses. We kind of missed being with people who were the salt of the earth, which to me was, you know, in New York City and people in the surrounding areas, the tri-state area. And so we moved back here. And, you know, before I got into this thing, and interrupt me if, like I said, I'm going on too long.
No, it's great. Yeah.
Before I got into this thing, there were maybe one or two books in the entire art technique section, which existed for a long time, that had anything to do with style. See, art teachers always eschewed style. It was all basics. You know, if you want to draw, you need to know perspective and design and color theory and anatomy. I mean, which is all great, and it is all important. And by the way, just for the record, I continued my studies and after NYU and, you know, in several art schools, a semester and semester and semester of life drawing and other art, and I mean, just to round out everything. But a lot of what I do is self-taught, but I have had formal training in a lot of stuff with anatomy and life drawing. But they didn't like style. They thought that really, that was baloney. Well, you know what? Between you and me and everyone who's listening, style is great. Style is awesome. Style is wonderful. People who watch Fairly Odd Parents aren't looking at that and saying, geez, I love the proportions. I just think those tangents are terrific. Look at the perspective on that thing. Nah, they're saying it's so quirky. Look how exaggerated it is. Wow, those colors are just sensational. That's what they're saying. And when they look at, like, the wonderful drawings of the comic book illustrators, they can't believe how detailed everything is and the impact and the silhouettes, you know, and the drama of those capes flapping. And how do they do that, you know? And the manga stuff, it's just, you know, those dazzling eyes. You're not going to learn any of that stuff in art schools. So I thought, you know, this stuff has value. I mean, I was convinced of it, you know. You know, it's like they only want to teach you how to make the main course. And I think that people really also love dessert, frankly. And if you go to a restaurant and they say, we're going to feed you steak, go somewhere else and get your dessert. Okay, fine. Go to me. I'll show you. I know it's part of the course. So anyway, the books start to really take off. And, you know, I covered all these different areas of fun and interesting styles where there really were tricks and techniques the pros were using all along, you know, that they weren't sharing with people because nobody really gave them any credence, but we were all using these things about, you know, whether it was manga style or retro cartooning or how to draw cartoon animals and simplify the anatomy so it was interesting and funny. And if you go to the art technique section now, you're going to find it filled with stuff of all kind of genres, you know, and you know, I got to tell you, I feel a little bit kind of, I know good about the fact that I introduced some of this, but there's still all the basics there, which are always important. But, you know, the people who always felt like, you know, I want to learn how to draw the stuff I love and I can't find it anywhere can now find it, you know. So that, I think, is the contribution that I'm glad I've made to popular art.
What you know, your first style book, what year is that published, by the way?
Yeah, I think that was 1988, and it sold several hundred thousand copies.
That's great. That's great. You know, it's funny you brought up the Fairly Odd Parents. I have a five-year-old son, and we've been watching that on the Netflix streaming, and, you know, I really enjoy it, but you're right. Yeah, all the proportions are all wrong, but, you know, that's not what we care about. We do care about.
It's some of the best writing on TV also. It's so damn clever.
I agree. I'm enjoying it. I'm probably enjoying it more than he is, but that's it. So at what point in your sort of artistic career do you get specifically into manga? Is there sort of one sort of source that really kind of, you know, kind of got you going with that? At what point does that sort of enter your life as sort of a fan and then as it influences your art?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. And you know, when I was very young, you know, I was just like nuts for it. For the early manga that was anime, back when it was all black and white stuff on TV, you know, the Astro Boys and the Simba and the Gigantor and a whole bunch of other stuff. And Eighth Man was my favorite show of all time. I mean, I loved that. I just thought it had tragic, heroic themes. You know, I was always a sucker for things with gigantic, overarching themes. And I just loved the character design. I didn't know that it was, you know, anime. I just thought that it was just intense. Because, you know, manga has a certain intensity that doesn't require capes. you don't need a laser beam. You don't have to shoot plutonium from your eyes. It's just, you know, the characters have a certain intensity. And then, you know, I mean, I enjoyed some of it here and there. There was a resurgence through the 80s, but...
Robotech!
Pardon me?
Robotech!
Yep, exactly.
Robotech,
exactly.
Star Blazers, Captain Harlock... I mean, there was tons and tons of shows, and I loved them. There's a quality to that. I mean, it really is art. You know, compare that at 3 o'clock you're watching Scooby-Doo and Friends and the way that looks, and then at 4 o'clock you're watching Robotech and the way that looks. I mean,
yes.
Completely different worlds.
There's something fine about those illustrations, absolutely. I mean, I have to say, there's some Hanna-Barbera shows. Scooby-Doo isn't my favorite, but there's some Hanna-Barbera shows I thought were very, very clever. I mean, the Jetsons still, I got to watch it. If I turn it on, it's there. I say, oh, gosh, I'll be late. There it is. But you're right. I mean, it's great. How about, like, Ghost in the Shell? I mean,
yes.
You know, that's just so terrific. But
well,
go ahead.
I was going to say, just to kind of jump on what Patrick said, Patrick and I are in our late 30s, so, you know, we're looking at sort of late 70s, early 80s, and the thing that I loved was, it was called Battle of the Planets here, which I guess in Japan it was Gatchaman, but, you know, that I loved that so much, and I was probably like 5 or 6 when that was out, and I think it was that intensity that you're talking about, of that sort of, you know, I don't know, it appealed to me even as a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old, where it was just, you know, I don't know, something about Japanese versus American cartoons. Americans sort of have to have a value at the end of it and have to teach a lesson. And I don't know, it always just felt more real to me. Years later, when I got the DVDs and I realized how edited the American versions were compared to the Japanese. Yeah, there was the whole Seven Zark Seven robot, which did not exist in the Japanese version. But I found out later that they put that in because they had to cut so much of the violence out that they were left with like a 15-minute cartoon. So they had to pad it with 5 minutes of this robot.
Oh, it gets worse than that, John.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole Robotech quote-unquote saga is actually 3 separate Japanese animated shows that Harmony Gold cut and sliced and put together to form one continuity, mm-hmm. to get more shows to have this epic kind of story. Mm-hmm. You know, the second part, with the Robotech Masters, was not really related to the first part, and the Invid War was not related to any. I mean, it was just terrible. The other one was Voltron, and my friends
and I
we used to argue over which was better, the Voltron that was all the little cars and ships and stuff, or the Voltron with the lions. And of course, I was always on the side of the lions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, you know,
one thing kind of interesting what you say about the power of manga is that, you know, there are many different things, many different aspects of cartooning and manga, but if you kind of, just to use a broad brush, boil it down, there are active and reactive poses. You know, American comics and American cartoons are very active. You know, people do things, they move, they make, you know, expressions, they go forward, they act. Manga, on the other hand, you know, is people don't realize this, but there's a lot of subtlety. And you see this in lots of movies where the power comes from restraint. It comes from somebody who, like for instance, Clint Eastwood, who doesn't do something, he knows something. He doesn't take the action, he takes his time. And in manga, the power comes from reacting, thinking, brooding, planning, waiting, about to strike, about to take revenge, thinking. And so you feel what the character is feeling. You root for the character. You wait. You wonder, is he going to strike? Is he going to this? And it kind of pulls you in. Whereas, you know, in American comics, which are great, I mean, I love them, you kind of sit back and you're a passive observer. So I think as a youngster, that's why manga draws you in. At least that's my theory on it.
You know, I just want to throw one more thing out there, John, because I thought this was kind of funny. I was so into Robotech, and you talk about how, you know, them cutting out all the violence and stuff. My very first convention I ever went to, just a little science fiction convention at like the local Ramada Inn or something like that. This guy had a dealer's table up, and he was selling all these videos. And one of the ones that he was selling was Macross.
Oh.
And it had the SD, was it SDF? One or whatever, the big ship on the cover and everything. And I thought, oh, Robotech. And so I bought it. Mm-hmm. And I took it home. And it was completely different. And I realized it was completely different when they showed a naked Minmay. And I'm sitting there going, holy crap. I didn't even know they could do that in a cartoon.
Yep. Well, that... And I think, you know, Chris brought that up earlier, is that, you know, manga and anime is for everybody in Japan. There yes. isn't this bias against, you know, just it being a kid's stuff. Although I think that's changed a little bit over here in the States.
In my books, one thing that I like, you know, is I like people to know is that, you know, there are certain cultural norms from the manga and even the manga instruction books that come out of Japan. But I like my stuff to, I like people to feel, and parents to feel, and also, frankly, a lot of the people who use it just for themselves, that they don't have to worry that there's going to be something untoward that's going to make them feel uncomfortable. So my stuff's all PG stuff. There's going to be some violence, there's going to be some attractive characters, but there's nothing going to be in there that's going to make people feel like, oh, that's not proper, because that's just, you know, I want them to feel that it's there's a comfort zone there, and that's important to me.
Sure. And, you know, I'm thinking back, and depending on the different kinds of books that you've had, and I went through some of them on the website, but I didn't look all the way back to everything you've ever done. There is probably a 99% chance that I have bought your books in the past trying to learn how to draw cartoon characters.
Well, thanks.
Because I was obsessed with that for years, you know, trying to learn how to draw, because I've always wanted to draw, and I can sort of draw faces, but I've never been able to draw bodies.
Right. And so that's a common thing. It's a common thing.
It's something about the proportions. I don't know. It's just kind of strange.
Well, you know, that was why I did this basic anatomy for the manga artist. And although it says anatomy on it, It's not just a book about muscles and bones, you know. I mean, matter of fact, that's, I'd say, a quarter of the book, just for reference. You don't have to draw that part. It's just so you should observe it says in the book, take a look, get the concepts. But the rest of the book has kind of interesting things that will help you in a basic way to see some, for lack of a better word, tricks and hints and techniques that are simplified to help you, like you're saying, you know, draw the body for people who have a difficulty with it, because it is challenging. And I think the thing that I see, the basic theme for most beginners, is that the body, no matter how they draw it, looks a little stiff. And they don't know where the line flow is and how to connect one section of the body to another section of the body with the flowing line. And, you know, the body is not just, you know, a tube for a leg, and, you know, a cylinder for the midsection and a barrel for the chest. It's everything is curved in a certain direction, and they're like, the curves oppose each curve, and they curve in and out. but a very simple and predictable way. And once you know how it works, it's like putting bricks together. This one goes here, that one goes there, and this goes here. And you know, some people say, wait a second, if I know the trick, I won't be creative. Well, you know, that's really not true. If you know how to do it accurately, you won't have to labor over simple things like, I don't know how to draw a hand. I can't draw the foot. No. Once you draw the hand, you know, then go ahead and draw an interesting pose. That's not in any book. Go ahead and draw an interesting character. Make the chest bigger if you want to make them strong. Make them skinny. Do anything you want with them. But you won't be struggling over basics. Good technique frees people to be creative. Right now, people struggle to be correct. See, there's that dichotomy that goes on. So these, but like for instance, little tricks like this. When you draw someone standing straight, people draw these straight legs and they just look stiff. And the reason is they don't realize that the calf curves back, and the thigh curves forward. They're never straight. And a little thing like when you draw the ankle, the inner ankle is higher than the outer ankle. And once you do these sort of things, you just indicate this just a little bit. All of a sudden, it looks like you're drawing with authority because you actually know where the parts go, and it will look good. Things like that are in the book.
Well, Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about your brand new book, The Basic Anatomy for the Manga Artist?
Sure. You know, most books on, you know, drawing anatomy or the human figure, you know, will show you, you know, one way to do everything, because there's the regular guy, there's the guy, you know, the typical person. But, you know, manga is a little stylish, obviously. And what happens is that most people who draw manga say, you know, I don't want to learn this figure drawing stuff. It's not what I want. I want to draw manga guys. And I understand that impulse. But I also know that to improve in drawing manga figures, you have to know something about figure drawing and you have to know something about anatomy. So that's the bad news. The good news is that I've come up with a book that is about anatomy and figure drawing, and it's all based on manga figures in the manga style. So you get to draw what you like, how you like, and learn the stuff you need at the same time. And for instance, instead of just drawing, you know, a regular eye, there are examples of many styles of manga eyes that are all proportionally correct to the manga head. You know, so you have lots of dazzling types of eyes you could use, and mouths and noses that all work in proportion to the facial features. And you'll see, like, you know, that generally, you know, the face is almost, you know, five eyes across. There's an eye length between both eyes. And there are things that you'll learn, these forms that are true for all faces, so that you can look at your drawing and say, why does that look right? Oh, yeah, you know, the eyes are too close. There should be an eye length between both eyes. So there are these guidelines and hints and steps through the whole thing so you can self-check your drawings and make the corrections you need, and it'll take on a new authority very quickly. So there's a lot of that sort of stuff in the book. And then there's some more things that are just that are kind of unique to this book, you know, how to do simplified, you know, mannequins so that you can quickly do the figure, light, shadow, perspective on the body for greater impact, and interesting areas like that.
Well, that's great. You know, I have the book here, and I'm as I spoke to you when we talked on the phone a couple weeks ago, I'm a musician and not an artist, but I was kind of a wannabe artist when I was a kid. And
play guitar, yeah. Right?
I do, yes, I do. But I had a great interest in art. So when this was sent to me, and then I got an email from, I suppose it's your publicist that sent it to me, I'm like, yeah, I want to get this guy on the show because I love drawing. And even though I don't do it really at all anymore, it's one of those things in the back of my mind, whereas, you know, I have a lot of artistic things going on in my life with my music and everything else, but it's like, mm-hmm. In the back of my mind, it's like, someday, when I have that miraculous time, I want to get back into this. So,
well, we even just sponsored the Drink and Draw on Twitter.
Yeah. So it's a great book from what it's very thorough. And if you're into art and if you're into manga, I think it's definitely worth checking out. So Chris, why don't you tell us about your website? That's one of the things I spoke to you on the phone a bit, was how impressed I was with your website. But why don't you throw the address out and maybe tell us a little bit of something about what people can find on your website?
Sure, thank you. And I want to thank you for having me. It's been delightful being here, and I really enjoyed talking to you guys. It was a lot of fun. The website's address is www.chrishartbooks.com. Pretty simple. And it's got all the covers of all my books, so you can take a look. And it's got also free tutorials, extensive free tutorials on it. And you can also write to me there, and I do get back to everybody. Lots of people write to me with questions about art techniques and questions about, how do I submit to publishers, how do I become a professional artist, etc. I really appreciate everybody who has helped me to become a professional artist. And by, people who have purchased my books and supported me, I it's my way of giving back. And even if you haven't, if you have an interest in art, you want to ask me a question, I'll try to get back to you. So that's the website, and I want to thank everyone for listening today.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much, Chris. And we're back. Well, hope you enjoyed that interview with Christopher Hart. Go and check out his brand new book, Basic Anatomy for the Manga Artist. That feels so much better when I do that and we're back. I just listened to our last episode where you did it. It sounds so awkward.
It does. It's weird. Yeah. We just fell into these roles,
I know. Once again, this week, for me, again, you can go to johnanilio.com to get my music. There is the Geek Dad Remix album, which is out right now. As I mentioned on the podcast a few weeks back, Geek Dad by Wired.com ran a contest where people submitted their remixes of the original Geek Dad song that I wrote with Z, Hipster Please, and the Geek Dad podcast. And the winners, and actually the way we ended up working out in the end is we picked six winners, and they each got a $50 gift certificate from ThinkGeek. So that was very cool, and that ThinkGeek got behind that. And so I picked five of them to put on the remix album, and I think they're great. One of the remixes, I should say, is by Casey Schultz, who is the host of the Sci-Fi Surplus podcast. So I thought that was pretty cool that that he did one. It's one of the best ones too. So it's really cool. And there's a couple other ones that I think are really interesting musically, and runs the gamut from like one of them has like a real Cars kind of feel, like a Rick Ocasek Cars kind of deal, and then one is like a total Nine Inch Nails noise thing where my voice is all slowed down. And so if you like remixes, go and check that out, and that is totally free. So go and get it. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
I am putting up one of my interviews from Worldcon over on sfsignal.com.
Very good.
I've got the used books post over on functionalnerds.com.
Which is also very good.
Yeah, there's a lot of feedback on that.
I saw, yeah.
And not just people leaving comments. I mean, I've gotten some things on Twitter too. Mm. So that's interesting. We've got a new art nerd post on Functional Nerds. We have a booze nerd post on Functional Nerds. We have something going live on Monday. I don't remember what it is, but we've got book reviews, I think, from James, from Paul. There's another one, I think, from Kathy. We have a new column starting very soon from Carrie Quinn over at Dagan Books. She's going to do a tech nerd post, tech nerd
awesome.
Column.
So yeah, that's going to start soon. Yeah.
Let's see what else.
I'd like to say for a minute for our reviewers, some of them have been asking for books from me, and about half of the books that I have are at my workplace right now. They're in a closet at work, and I can't get into my job. So some people are waiting for books, and I can't get them out. So if you're waiting for them, I'm sorry. It'll be a couple weeks still. But so we got a lot of cool stuff. That Art Node post was great by Galen. So so you got to meet a bunch of our contributors.
I did.
At Worldcon. So
in fact, Edge Books launched, I think it's Edge. It's either Edge or their parent, launched Broken Time Blues, which mm-hmm. is a new novel that has stories.
It's an anthology, right?
Right. It's an anthology with stories set in the 20s, and several of our contributors have, I believe, have stories in there. And then Galen did the cover art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yep. So she totally signed that book for me. So I bought that book and had her sign it. She did a little bit of custom art inside for me. So cool. I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, I get to meet almost all of our contributors.
Great.
James which I've met before. James, Andy, John, Galen. So I guess Paul and Kathy, I still haven't met in person.
Yes. Well, and John too.
And then Sandra Wickham.
Cool.
I got to meet her. She wasn't feeling good because she had con crud before the con, and it hit her at the con, and she ended up getting sick. But I think she's feeling better now.
Cool.
Also got to meet people like, you know, Lou Anders, who I'd never met in person before, John Picasso, Patrick Ruthfuss, Joe Walton, Lee Harris from Angry Robot, Lauren Bucus from Angry Robot, Gail Carriger, got to see her, Mer Lafferty, I'd never met before in person, got to hang out with Mer, and her awesome friends, John and Laura.
Yeah. John Seymour?
I don't know his last name.
Oh, it's probably him. Is he a doctor?
He is, yes.
Yes, it's him. Seymour, he's awesome.
He was.
Yeah.
He confirmed what Blake Charlton said about Scrubs.
Which is?
That it gets it right more than any other show.
Wow. Very good. Very good. Yeah. No, they're great people. I've met them a couple times at Balticon and hung out with them. So very good. Very good. He does, I don't know, was he doing a presentation at Worldcon, or was he just there to hang out?
I think he was just there to hang out. I don't know that he did a presentation.
Yeah, because he's done some presentations, like sort of medical presentations for sort of the science fiction community at Balticon before. So
yeah, I don't think he did that. Now Gail did an archaeology presentation where she was talking about kilns for making ceramics in ancient times, and these kilns were kind of cool because they would like dig out a hole, and that's where they would put all the whatever they were going to burn, and then there'd be kind of a channel and then a pit, and then they'd have something on the pit, and then there would be like this dome thing. And really what I realized is if they cut the heat, it essentially did indirect heat, and if they cut that indirect heat to about 10% what they were doing, because for the ceramics they wanted like this really high heat. But if they cut that heat by 10% and they had that indirect heat and the smoke, essentially they had a Southern Pit barbecue.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Yeah. It always comes back to barbecue, doesn't it?
And I told her that, and she said I was absolutely right. So.
Yeah. Well, very good. Very good. Well, all right. Well, I think that barbecue is always a good place to stop. All right, everybody. So we hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
I'm home all alone, I pick up my phone, I tap the screen and launch Safari. I navigate to a page and I'm sent into a rage. I wanted fun, but now I'm sorry. I check the address of the site and I know that it's right, but the only thing I see is a blue Lego. I see a blue Lego. I wanna see a video, but the only thing I see is a